Welcome to History Matters, the programme that looks at matters around history and tries to see why they matter. We're paying special attention to the series about the World Heritage Battlefield, produced at the behest of the Museum of the Second World War in Gdańsk, a founding member of the World Battlefield Forum. This series takes a close look at battlefields all around the world, not just in Poland, but also across Europe, in the United States, on other continents. The idea of the Battlefield Forum is to look at battlefields in a completely different context, not just as a place where a heroic battle took place, but at a place that can teach us something today. It's an extremely interesting and valuable concept that was set up by the Second World War Museum in Gdańsk. The man running the WBMF is Karol Szejko, and we're happy to have him in the studio. Good morning, Karol.
Good morning, listeners. Good morning, Adam.
Could you tell us about the Battlefield Museum Forum?
That was actually established in 2018, where we came up with the idea that we would like to consult battlefield museums in Europe or around the world in the context of the development plans for Westerplatte and the War of 1939 Museum.
So these are the battle sites here in Gdańsk.
The iconic battle site in Gdańsk is obviously Westerplatte, so we wanted to bring all those professionals working at battlefields museums together to exchange ideas and discuss what can be done to present the battle narrative in the best possible way in the open-air museums, such as, for instance, Westerplatte is, or other museums around the world as well.
So who have you got around the world? I mean, you said you got a number of museums.
The last forum in 2018 involved professionals or museologists and curators or heads of museums institutions from Verdun, from Gettysburg, from Pearl Harbor, from Gallipoli battlefield, as well as from Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Poland, of course.
So truly international.
It is international indeed, and the forum that was meant to take place, but it didn't because of the pandemic.
Sadly, yes.
Sadly, we already had about 30 institutions confirmed at the forum, and hopefully the next forum will happen
and the next
year.
Next year being?
October
2022.
2022, right.
Okay. And so you're getting a lot of feedback from these museums. Now, I know that when we met and we were talking about the series a year ago, you were planning that forum meeting, but then it looked as though it wasn't going to be likely. Do you think the series is helping at all with the Museum Battlefield Forum?
I mean, obviously, this is very instructive for anyone interested in battlefields or battlefield museums, because the way we look at battlefield museums today, quite like indoor museum, you show artifacts and you run a certain narrative about war, about battle, about history. The battlefield museum has to be understood in a similar way. It's a museum, only it's outdoor, and the way to present the narrative is very important to the visiting guests, because in some battlefields there is some infrastructure, in others there's none. You can show the battle story through all other means, and this is what we were trying to learn.
So you have visual stimulus, but this sort of helps you with audio stimulus as well, so it sort of fills in the story.
Exactly, that's exactly how it works. Yeah.
That is great. That is really interesting. I'm glad that this is happening, and I'm glad that we're working together on this series. It really is bringing a lot of positive fruit. I think you said it's interesting for people that are interested in battlefields, but I think I would say that the series is actually also interesting for people who aren't interested. It is a very good starting point. It introduces them, because I don't know about you, I mean, you are far more experienced than I am in the area of history and battlefields and museums, but I get the impression that a lot of people, they hear the word history, battlefield, there's a rolling of the eyes and say it's boring, let's go and do something else. Whereas, in fact, if they can engage and they see such splendid museums such as the Second World War Museum, they suddenly see, well, this is actually really interesting. I mean, does that sound true to you?
Well, yeah, especially if you look at Westerplatte. This is very close to the Museum of the Second World War. It's just, you know, a few kilometres away. And a great battle unravelled there in 1939. And I think that what you said, bringing the battlefield narratives to wider audiences, we try to concentrate not only on the battles itself, the soldiers involved, or statistics, but, you know, I think in the modern world, and especially after the Second World War, the countries, the nations, have begun to understand that to tell a battle narrative, it's not enough just to concentrate on the details and on the statistics, just the hard data, but also bringing it more to the individual level of soldiers fighting on a given battlefield. It's generally about humanizing the narrative of a battle and bringing it more to a popular audience so that they can relate to the individuals or to the groups of people who fought the battle.
World War I was sadly rich in battles, land and sea. We had the Somme, we had the Marne, Battle of Jutland, Gallipoli, Ypres. All of them have different associations, different tragedies, different stories, different places. But today we're looking at one of the bloodiest battles of World War I, Verdun. Tell me, which of these battles do you find significant of the ones that we mentioned before?
I think, obviously, you know, when you think of all those that you've mentioned, because we concentrate on Verdun, we've got an audio program together with Radio Gdansk on Verdun Battlefield. So I would say Verdun is the defining battle of possibly the whole World War One, because obviously it is a defining battle for the French.
Exactly.
And this is the defining battle for the French, the same as possibly Somme is the defining battle of World War One for the British. Mm-hmm. And obviously the French fought the battle, losing exorbitant number of people and traumatizing the whole French society for the next 20 or 30 years. So I would say this battle is the one, yeah.
Well, it was also the longest battle. It took nearly a whole year. It was from February the 21st, my notes say, here, until December the 18th, 1916. So that's practically a year. Verdun is an obvious place for a battle. It's en route from Germany to Paris. But what was the battle about?
I mean, obviously, in military terms, this was the attempt from the German side to finish off the French and to bleed them to death. But like you mentioned, the battle was a year long, and it was fought only over an area of possibly 10 square kilometres, with casualties exceeding all human understanding. So it's a difficult question to answer what the battle was about, but generally it was about to, you know, from the German side, it was to crush the French. But what the Germans hadn't expected is that they would suffer, you know, a similar number of casualties like the French.
So my question to you is, who won?
Well, technically it was the French victory, because the Germans advanced and then they came back to their initial positions after a year. And there was a technical victory by the French. But my personal view is obviously, and historians say the same, that there were no winners in this battle. It was just a battle of attrition. That's it.
Absolutely. So a lot of lives lost and, in fact, no winners at all. Does your museum, the Museum of the Second World War, reflect on World War One at all?
We actually see this as a prelude to the exhibition telling the story of World War II. So when you walk into the exhibition of the Museum of the Second World War, you will have this film feature. It's a short film. It's about 8-10 minutes, telling the story of what happened in between the wars, telling the story of the First World War, how First World War actually contributed to the outbreak of World War II. So Verdun Battlefield came to be understood as the battlefield of carnage, blood, death, and death toll beyond our understanding.
Absolutely.
And I think that over the course of the years, you know, after the First World War, but more after the Second World War, I think there was a need to maybe explain Verdun Battlefield to the new generations of the French. Because obviously, you know, the veterans who founded the Verdun Memorial and the people who went through Second World War, some of them even veterans of Verdun,
they had a living memory.
They had a living memory. And, you know, for the new generations of the French, of the Europeans, it was, you know, extremely difficult to understand what happened at Verdun. Why was there a battle that was 1 year long that resulted in a cosmic number of casualties, and what actually happened there, and how the Verdun battlefield actually changed over the years, because obviously it was overgrown with the bush, with the forest. Mm-hmm. And you know, that narrative had to be changed in order to show this Verdun battlefield in a new light to new generations of young people. And as I understand from our contacts with the representatives of Verdun Memorial, mm-hmm. they needed to rethink the idea behind Verdun Memorial mm-hmm. and how to bring it closer to the young generation.
And do you think that's been successful?
I think it's been very successful. Yeah, it's been very successful.
So today, does Verdun stand as a symbol of unity or conflict?
I think today it does stand as a symbol of unity because we see Verdun as the French battle. But don't forget about those hundreds of thousands of German soldiers that shed their blood there in the same way as the French. Frontal attacks, artillery barrage. Obviously, this was artillery battle mm-hmm. most of all because, as we know, 80% of all casualties were caused by mm-hmm. artillery. Don't forget about all those people that were traumatized for life, maimed, mm-hmm. With limbless. So that battle defined the whole generation of the French, and the young generation has to understand what happened there, and this is why the Verdun Memorial has been refurbished, as I understand, to bring it closer to the younger generations.
I'll ask you a tricky question in that case. Do you think there will ever be a case for museums in Central Europe that talk about the Second World War ever changing that particular profile to becoming less a commemoration but more of an area of reconciliation?
I think this is happening in some part because look what happens with World War II narratives. Over the years, those narratives, those stories have evolved to talk more even or in the same way about civilian casualties of World War II, not taking the ones who were sent to, obviously, concentration camps, but also the general civilian population migrating, suffering because of the war, suffering because of the political changes. And I think that's already been happening, and it's going to a point where we would try to understand an individual, a family, okay, or an ethnic group that was involved in the war unwillingly and suffered in the same way as soldiers suffered on battlefields.
So do you think there is any need for a First World War museum? I know that in our programme we have Professor Stevenson from the London School of Economics who will be talking about the historical context, and he's of the opinion that a lot of the major battles actually were in the East, but it's interesting that it doesn't seem to be celebrated that significantly here. Do you think there's a case for having a First World War museum in Poland?
I would probably welcome the First World War Museum in Poland to tell the story of the battles on the territories of Poland, partitioned between Germany, Austro-Hungary and Russia. And you're right. I mean, those battles that were fought on the Polish soil, Poland, of course, didn't exist at that time, but they were dramatic in the same way, and they resulted in massive casualties in the same way as the battles of Verdun, Marne and Somme. So there is probably, you know, enough space in the World War I narrative to bring those battles closer to the general public so that we in Poland, but also the European audience can learn what happened here on the Polish soil.
Yes, I would think this is really interesting because from the point of view of the Western allies, we have a situation where the Western Front was very well known. And we know about Gallipoli and the Dardanelles. That was an attempt to cut off Turkey. But from our perspective, we know very, very little. But at the same time, it's fascinating because in Russia, right in the middle of the First World War, you have a dramatic change. You have a revolution that dethrones the Romanov dynasty. The Tsar is kicked out. You have a Bolshevik revolution. And then sort of, it's difficult to say, the Bolsheviks were so much against everything the Tsar stood for.
Well, exactly. And well, the change that came obviously resulted in Russia withdrawing from World War One. Obviously important for Poland that strived for independence and that was put into this tragic, you know, situation in terms of soldiers, because the Polish soldiers served for Austro-Hungary, they served for Germany, they served for the Russian Empire.
I'll just interject here, for some of our listeners may not be aware of the fact that Poland is a very old state. It goes back 1,000 years, but at the end of the 18th century it was partitioned by its neighbours. So it existed in the sense of a people and a nation, but it didn't exist as a unitary state. So I think we just need to bring our listeners up to speed on that.
Okay, thank you, Adam. Yes, that's what happened, and you know, you can imagine those soldiers fighting against each other as soldiers of enemy armies. So that was the situation. And whenever those people fought, like a lot of those battles took place on the Polish soil, they always had one thing in mind, to drive towards independence, which was the final goal. So there was a lot of going on in sense of politics at that time, trying to bring Poland independence after the war has ended.
Mm-hmm. So using the fact that Poland's occupiers were fighting each other, so to utilise that to try and regain independence.
Sure.
That is interesting. Well, I agree with you. I think there is a case for a museum because it is a founding fact for the reconstitution of Poland after the First World War. So in many ways, there is a very strong case. I must say, when I first came to Poland, and I love living here, it's a great country, one of the many things that fascinated, is that one of the few wars that England seems to be interested in is the First World War. We have monuments in every village. Most people, we have poppy days. We have a whole concept. The French also, I mean, they have the Verdun monuments. They have all the official monuments in Paris at the Arc de Triomphe. There's this real emphasis on the First World War. But it's quite interesting when you talk to people here, the general level of knowledge about World War I seems to be quite limited. Why do you think that is?
I think partly because Poland at that time did not have its own army. Okay, like we said, it was partitioned. People fought on the enemy sides. Maybe this just isn't what people would like to hear, because obviously we have this great Polish history of all the kings fighting those, iconic battles with their neighbours, because Poland is in that very precarious geographical position in Europe. Poland fighting all those battles, and then suddenly there comes First World War. There is no Polish army. There are Polish units in the conflicting armies, but maybe that hasn't, found its way into the key or, mm-hmm. or public understanding. Mm-hmm. And, a World War I museum like this would probably be, a good idea.
I couldn't agree with you more. We're also joined today by another guest, Emmanuel Huc. Is that correct?
Yes, perfect.
Excuse me, my French is not very good, but I'm always hoping to learn. Emmanuel Huc is a man that lives here in Gdańsk, has been here for how many years now?
Oh, 10 months.
10 months, so that's less than 1 year. He is French, as we can hear, and speaks wonderful English. And Emmanuel, I wanted to ask you, because today we're talking about the Battle of Verdun in particular, the First World War in general. I wanted to ask you, what does Verdun mean to a young French man today?
Verdun is like the battle in France we will talk about as hell. But it's something for a young generation was disappearing, I think, over years. First World War had big impact, obviously, but on our generation it's less and less. We talk sometimes about the Second World War because it's dictator, but First World War wasn't dictator, so it's not the same kind of idea of conflict. And I think some people know, but I would not be surprised if you have like statistics about how many young people know what happened in Verdun that results would not show the battle.
So a lot of young people have other things on their minds. It's a long time ago. And so you think that for a lot of young people, the word Verdun doesn't actually mean anything.
I think people who know Verdun will know about it. But I think that a lot of people start to forget what was it. Like I was saying, Second World War is an important part because of conflict of idea. In France, I think younger people now will be more impacted by this terrorism attack that we had a few years ago.
Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah, like this. And they are just, I don't think that we have tried to keep this tradition alive. Like, yes, we have ceremony, but when I'm in Poland, I can see ceremony everywhere, like everything is. It's not the same meaning.
Do you know where Verdun is?
Yes.
Have you been there to the museum?
No, I didn't go to museum. I was near, but okay. I didn't do this.
I think if young people actually discover and they hear that, for example, Verdun is the only thing between Germany and Paris, or a number of small hills, that was the only fortified place since the Middle Ages that stopped Germans wanting to invade France. So maybe this was a good thing that the French, there's a good reason you weren't stopping a dictator, but there was an army that was entering France. As we remember Poincaré's speech, he was saying that France has been attacked. And so it is quite legitimate to defend your country, I think.
Yes, but it's something that in France we used to have. It's why something funny. Last time I was asking someone if I look French, and she was like, no. And I said, but I'll look a French person. And she was like, I don't know. We have such a different geography and such a big history. People, like in Poland, came and went out of our country. We had British people for 100 years living in France. No one see. We don't look British. Mm-hmm. We are close to the Mediterranean Sea, and we have a North Sea also. We have Atlantic coast, and people look different. And so, in same time, it's part of us, and it's just like, oh, people came. People went out. Oh, it's okay.
But what brings those people together, I would suggest, is their culture. French culture is certainly different from British, I mean, and it's from German or even Italian.
But you can see, it depends which part of France you will go. You can see which part British people brought. Me, for example, I'm from Marseille, and you can see this North African culture, this Greek culture. It's something, you know, we stay, and because they came. They didn't stay because Marseille is not Greek and Southwest is not British, but you can feel it when you're there.
But for French people today, do you think they differentiate people that come in peace and people that come with less peaceful intentions?
I'm from a generation where we didn't have any war in France. We didn't have...
Except Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah, but it's a war of idea. And it's not a war like we are coming to take your country. There is no... If I talk with someone who is from Yugoslavia, I would have totally different idea about it. Because he lived, he is from my generation, but he lived in a country during the war.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true. Do you think Verdun is worth remembering?
I think everything should be remembered. There is different places in France who are... good for our culture because of what happened there. Verdun is a part of it, definitely.
And what is the lesson that Verdun teaches us today?
I think it's a picture of resilience. It's so long battle. It's not like, oh, 1-2 days and it's over. It took months and it was like real... It was really hard for both sides. And it was like, we fight for our country. So patriotic to think about... When you think about, you should think about... Patriotism Act, from German as for French, because both were in the same boat. It's for me, this is a picture of it. It's patriotism. They were living in a condition like terrible. They were living in the mud. They could not eat correctly. They had to dig all the time to go somewhere. For me, it's the best example is really patriotism.
Thank you all for listening to History Matters. Please stay tuned for the World War II Museum's epic story on Verdun just after this broadcast, or alternatively search the museum's webpage for the podcast. Thank you to Carol Shako, to Emmanuel Hook, and to all of you for listening.
Thank you so much and have a good day.